Chapter 32. To Keep the Bargain. Birgitta was leaning against the stone wall of the three-story house, thinking sadly of Geidel, when the bundle of emotions and physical sensations in the back of her head, her awareness of Elaine, suddenly spasmed. That was the only word for it. Whatever it was lasted just a moment, but afterward the bond was full of limpness. Elaine was conscious, but unsteady. She was unafraid, however. Still, Birgitta threw back her cloak and moved to the corner to peer up Full Moon Street. Elaine could be too brave for her own good. The hardest thing about being Elaine's warder was keeping her from endangering herself beyond need. Nobody was indestructible, but the bloody woman thought she bloody well was. Her sigil should have been an iron lion rather than a golden lily. That light shone in the window, spilling a pale pool into the narrow street, and there was not a sound except for a cat yowling somewhere in the night.
"Saritha feels muzzy," Ned Yarman muttered beside her.
The tall young warder's boyish face was a grim shadowed mask inside the hood of his cloak.
"She feels weak."
Birgitta became aware of the other warders crowding her close, stone-faced and hard-eyed. That was clear enough, even by moonlight. Something had happened to all of the Aes Sedai, it seemed. But what? "The Lady Elaine said she'd shout if she needed us," she told them, as much to reassure herself as anything else. Even if both Carianna and Saritha were dark friends, they would have been helpless to do anything linked, and apparently whatever had happened to them as well. Burn her! She should have insisted that she and the other warders go along.
"Carianna won't be pleased if we interfere needlessly," Venner Kosan said quietly.
Blade slim and dark, with touches of white in his tightly curled black hair and short beard, he appeared completely at ease.
"I say we wait. She feels confident, whatever's going on." "More so than she did going in," Sierralar Juna added, earning him a sharp glance from Venner.
Still short of his middle years, Sierral seemed all bones, though his shoulders were wide. Birgitta nodded. Elaine was confident, too. But then Elaine would feel self-assured walking an unraveling rope stretched over a pit full of sharp stakes. A dog began barking in the distance, and the yowling cat went silent, but other dogs answered the first in a spreading ripple that faded away as suddenly as it had begun. They waited, with Birgitta fretting in silence. Suddenly Venner growled an oath and shed his cloak. The next instant his blade was in his hand and he was running up the street, followed by Sierral and Taven, cloaks billowing behind, their blades bared too. Before they had gone two steps, Jaime gave a wild cry. Unsheathing his sword, he threw his cloak down and raced after the other three at a speed that belied his age. Bellowing with rage, Ned ran too, the steel in his fist glittering in the moonlight. Fury stabbed through the bond, like the battle fury that took some men, and sadness, too, but still no fear. Birgitta heard the soft rasp of swords being unsheathed behind her and spun cloak flaring. "Put those up. They're no use here."
"I know what the warders running in means as well as you, my lady," Urith said in courtly accents, obeying smoothly, and with clear reluctance. Lean and as tall as most men, the Saldaean denied being nobly born, but whenever the conversation came around to what she had done before swearing the oath as a hunter for the horn, she always gave one of her rare smiles and changed the subject. She was skilled with that sword, however. "If the Aes Sedai are dying..."
"Elaine is alive," Birgitta cut in.
"Alive and in trouble.
She's our concern now, but we'll need a lot more swords to rescue her.
And more than swords."
"Somebody collar that man!"
Two guardswomen seized Hark's coat before he could slip away into the darkness. Apparently he had no wish to stay near where Aes Sedai had died. Neither did she.
"Gather the extra horses and follow me," she said, swinging into Arrow's saddle. "And ride like fire!"
She suited her words, digging her heels into the rangy gray gelding's flanks without waiting. It was a wild gallop through dark, twisting streets where people were just beginning to appear. She reined Arrow around the few carts and wagons out this early, but men and women had to leap from her path, often shaking fists and shouting curses.
She only urged the gelding for more speed, her cloak flapping behind. Before she reached the Mondel gate, Elaine was moving. She had been uncertain at first, but there could be no mistaking it now. Elaine was moving northeast at about walking speed. The bond said she was too wobbly to walk far, maybe to walk at all, but a wagon would make the same pace. The sky was turning gray. How long before she could gather what was needed? In the inner city, the street spiraled inward, rising past towers glittering in 100 colors toward the golden domes and pale spires of the royal palace atop the highest of Camelin's hills. As she galloped around the rim of the Queen's Plaza, soldiers stared at her. They were being fed from black kettles atop push barrows, cooks ladling some sort of brown stew onto tin plates, and every man she could see wore his breastplate and had his helmet hanging from his sword hilt. Good. Every moment saved was a moment toward saving Elaine. Two lines of guardswomen were practicing the sword in the Queen's stable yard when she galloped in, but the lath blade stopped rattling when she flung herself out of the saddle, let Arrow's reins drop, and ran toward the colonnade. "Hadora, run tell the windfinders to meet me in the map room right away," she shouted without slowing. "All of them! Sanetta, you do the same for Captain Gaibon, and have another horse saddled for me!" Arrow was played out for today. She was past the columns by that time, but she did not look back to see whether they were obeying. They would be. She raced through tapestry-hung hallways and up sweeping marble stairs, got lost and shouted curses as she retraced her steps at a run. Liveried serving men and women gaped as they dodged out of her way. At last she reached the lion-carved doors of the map room, where she paused only long enough to tell the two burly guardsmen on duty to admit the windfinders as soon as they appeared, then went in. Gaibon was already there, in his burnished breastplate with the three golden knots on his shoulder, and Dialin, delicately holding her blue silk skirts up as she moved, the pair of them frowning at the huge mosaic map, where well over a dozen red disks marked the city's northern wall. Never before had there been so many assaults at once, not even 10, but Birgitta spared the disks barely a glance. "Gaibon, I need every horse and halberd you can muster," she said, unpinning her cloak and tossing it down on her long writing table. "The crossbowmen and archers will have to handle anything that crops up by themselves for a few hours. Elaine's been captured by Dark Friend Aes Sedai, and they're trying to carry her out of the city." Some of the clerks and messengers began murmuring, but Mistress Anford silenced them with a sharp order to see to their work. Birgitta eyed the colorful map in the floor, measuring distances. Elaine seemed to be moving toward the Sunrise Gate and the road to the River Erinen, but even if they used one of the smaller gates, they had gone too far to be aiming at anything but the eastern wall. "They'll probably have her through the gates by the time we're ready to move. We're going to travel to just this side of the ridge east of the city, and take what was going to happen out of the streets, away from people's homes. It would be better out in the open in any case. In that tangle of streets with horsemen and halberdmen jammed together, there would be too many people to get in the way, too much chance of accidents." Gaibon nodded, already issuing terse orders that brown-clad clerks copied down hastily for him to sign and passed to young messengers in red and white, who went running as soon as the paper was in hand. The boys' faces were frightened. Birgitta had no time for her own fear. Elaine felt none, and she was a prisoner. Sadness, yes, but no fear. "We certainly need to rescue Elaine," Dialin said calmly. "But she'll hardly thank you if you give Aramilla Camelin by doing it. Not counting the men in the towers and holding the gates, almost half the trained soldiers and armsmen in the city are on the northern wall. If you strip away the rest, one more attack will gain a stretch of the wall. Crossbows and bows alone won't stop them. Once they have that, Aramilla's forces will pour into the city, enough to overwhelm what you propose to leave. You will have neatly reversed our positions and worsened ours. Aramilla will have Camelin, and Elaine will be outside without enough armsmen to get back in. Unless these dark friends have somehow smuggled an army inside Camelin, a few hundred men will do as well as thousands." Birgitta scowled at her. She'd never been able to like Dialin. She did not know why exactly, but Dialin had just made her bristle at first sight. She was fairly certain the other woman felt the same about her. She could never say up without Dialin saying down. "You care about putting Elaine on the throne, Dialin. I care about keeping her alive to mount that throne. Or not, so long as she's alive. I owe her my life, and I won't let hers trickle away in dark friend hands."
Dialin sniffed and went back to studying the red discs as if she could see the soldiers fighting, her frown deepening the lines at the corners of her eyes. Birgitta clasped her hands behind her back and forced herself to stand still. She wanted to pace with impatience. Elaine was still trundling toward the sunrise gate.
"There's something you need to know, Gaibon. We'll be facing at least two Aes Sedai, likely more, and they may have a weapon, a Turangreal that makes balefire. Have you ever heard of that?"
"Never. It sounds dangerous, though."
"Oh, it is. Dangerous enough that it's prohibited for Aes Sedai. In the War of the Shadow, even Dark Friends stopped using it."
She barked a bitter laugh. All she knew of balefire now was what Elaine had told her. It had come from her in the first place, yet that only made matters worse. Would all of her memories go? She did not think she had lost any recently, but how would she know if she had? She could remember bits of the founding of the White Tower, pieces of what she and Geidel had done to help it be founded, but nothing before that. All of her earlier memories were yesterday's smoke.
"Well, at least we'll have Aes Sedai of our own," Gaibon said, signing another order.
"They're all dead, except for Elaine," she told him flatly. There was no way to gild that.
Dialin gasped, her face growing pale. One of the clerks clasped her hands to her mouth, and another knocked over his ink jar. The ink fanned across the tabletop in a black stream and began dripping onto the floor. Rather than reprimanding the man, Mistress Anford steadied herself with a hand on another clerk's writing table.
"I hope to make up for that," Birgitta went on. "But I can't promise anything except that we're going to lose men today. Maybe a lot of men."
Gaibon straightened.
His expression was thoughtful, his hazel eyes steady.
"That will make for an interesting day," he said finally. "But we'll get the daughter heir back, whatever the cost."
A solid man, Charles Gaibon, and brave. He had demonstrated that often enough on the walls. Too good-looking for her taste, of course. Birgitta realized she had begun pacing back and forth across the mosaic and stopped. She knew nothing of being a general, whatever Elaine thought, but she knew that showing nerves could infect others with them. Elaine was alive. That was all that was important. Alive and moving further away by the minute. The left-hand door opened, and one of the burly guardsmen announced that Julania Fot and Karaila Sir Tofny had returned. Gaibon hesitated, looking to her, but when she said nothing, he told the man to admit them. They were very different women, in appearance at least, though each carried a wooden walking staff. Julania was plump and pretty, with touches of white in her dark hair, while Karaila was short and slim, with tilted green eyes and fiery red curls. Birgitta wondered whether those were their real names. These kinswomen changed names as easily as other women changed stockings. They wore plain woolens, suitable for country peddlers, which each had been in the past, and each was a keen observer, skilled at taking care of herself. They could talk their way out of most situations, but their simple belt knives were not the only blades they carried, and they could surprise a strong man with what they could do with those walking staffs. Both offered curtsies. Julania's skirts and cloak were damp and splashed with mud around the hem.
"Elorian, Luon, and Abella began breaking camp early this morning, my lady," she said. "I only stayed long enough to make sure of their direction, north, before coming to report."
"The same is true with Aemlyn, Arathella, and Pellavar, my lady," Karaila added. "They're coming for Caemlyn."
Birgitta did not need to examine the large map spread out on the table with its markers. Depending on how muddy the roads were, how much rain they had to contend with, they could reach the city by that afternoon.
"You've done well, both of you. Go find yourselves hot baths."
"Do you think they've had a change of heart?" she asked Dialin once the two women had left.
"No," the woman replied without hesitation, then sighed and shook her head. "I fear the most likely thing is that Elorian has convinced the others to support her for the Lion Throne. They may be thinking to defeat Aramilla and take over the siege. They have half again her numbers and double ours."
She let that hang. There was no need to say the rest. Even using kinswomen to shift men, they would be hard-pressed to hold the wall against that many.
"First we get Elaine back," Then we can worry about that lot, Birgitta said. Where were those bloody windfinders?
No sooner did she have the thought than they were padding into the room behind Shanella, a riotous rainbow of silks. Except for Renaila, last in line in her linens, yet a red blouse, green trousers, and a deep yellow sash made her bright enough, though even Rainin, a round-cheeked young woman with just half a dozen golden medallions dangling onto her cheek, made Renaila's honor chain look bare. Renaila's face wore an expression of stoic endurance.
"I do not appreciate being threatened," Shanella said angrily, sniffing the golden scent box on its golden chain around her neck. Her dark cheeks were flushed. "That guardswoman said if we did not run, she would kick—" "Never mind what she said exactly. It was a threat, and I will not be—" "Elaine has been captured by dark friend Aes Sedai," Birgitta cut in. "I need you to make a gateway for the men who are going to rescue her."
A murmur rose among the other windfinders. Shanella gestured sharply, but only Renaila fell silent. The others just lowered their voices to whispers to her obvious displeasure. By the medallions crowding their honor chains, several of them matched Shanella's rank.
"Why did you summon all of us for one gateway?" she demanded. "I keep the bargain, you can see. I brought everyone as you ordered. But why do you need more than one?"
"Because you're all going to form a circle and make a gateway big enough to take thousands of men and horses." That was one reason. Shanella stiffened, and she was not alone. Curin, her face like a black stone, practically quivered with outrage, and Risale, normally a very dignified woman, did quiver. Sanina, with her weathered face and old marks indicating she once had worn more than 6 earrings and fatter ones, fingered the jeweled dagger thrust behind her green sash.
"Soldiers?" Shanella said indignantly. "That is forbidden. Our bargain says we will take no part in your war. Zaida Din Parida Blackwing commanded it so. And now that she is mistress of the ships, that command carries even greater weight. Use the kinswomen. Use the Aes Sedai."
Birgitta stepped close to the dark woman, looking her straight in the eyes. The kin were useless for this. None of them had ever used the power as a weapon. They might not even know how. "The other Aes Sedai are dead," she said softly. Someone behind her moaned, one of the clerks. "What is your bargain worth if Elaine is lost? Aramilla certainly won't honor it." Keeping her voice steady saying that took effort. It wanted to shake with anger, shake with fear. She needed these women, but she could not let them know why, or Elaine would be lost. "What will Zaida say if you ruin her bargain with Elaine?" Shanella's tattooed hand half-lifted the piercework scent box to her nose again, then let it fall among her many jeweled necklaces. From what Birgitta knew of Zaida Din Parida, she would be more than displeased with anyone who wrecked that bargain, and it was beyond doubtful that Shanella wished to face the woman's anger, yet she only looked pensive. "Very well," she said after a moment. "For transport only, though. It is agreed?" She kissed the fingertips of her right hand, prepared to seal the bargain. "You only need do what you want," Birgitta said, turning away. "Gaibon, it's time. They must have her to the gate by now." Gaibon buckled on his sword, took up his helmet and steel-backed gauntlets, and followed her and Dailin out of the map room trailed by the windfinders, with Shanella loudly insisting that they would provide a gateway only. Birgitta whispered instructions to Gaibon before leaving him striding toward the front of the palace, while she hurried to the queen's stable-yard, where she found a hammer-nosed dun gelding wearing her saddle and waiting, the reins held by a young groom with her hair in a braid not much different from her own. She also found all 121 guardswomen armored and mounted. Climbing into the dun saddle, she motioned them to follow her. The sun was a golden ball clear of the horizon in a sky with only a few high white clouds. At least they would not have rain to contend with, too. Even a wagon might have been able to slip away in some of the heavy rainstorms Camelin had seen lately. A thick snake of men, 10 and 12 abreast, spanned the Queen's Plaza now, stretching out of sight in both directions, horsemen in helmets and breastplates, alternating with men in every sort of helmet imaginable, carrying shouldered halberds,
most wearing mail shirts or jerkins sewn with steel discs, and only rarely a breastplate, each group large or small, headed by the banner of its house, or the banner of a mercenary company. The cell swords would have too many watchers to try slacking off today. Minus the crossbowmen and archers, there would be close on 12,000 men in that column, two-thirds of them mounted. How many would be dead before noon? She pushed that thought out of her mind. She needed every one of them to convince the sea folk. Any man who died today could die as easily on the wall tomorrow. Every man of them had come to Camelin prepared to die for Elaine. At the head of the column were better than 1,000 guardsmen, helmets and breastplates gleaming in the sun, steel-tipped lances slanted precisely, the first of them waiting behind the banner of Andor, the rearing white lion on a field of scarlet, and Elaine's banner, the golden lily on blue, at the edge of one of Camelin's many parks. It had been a park, anyway, but oaks hundreds of years old had been cut down and hauled away along with all the other trees and the flowering bushes, their roots dug out to clear a smooth space 100 paces wide. The graveled paths and grassy ground had long since been trampled to mud by hooves and boots. 3 other parks around the palace had received the same treatment to make places for weaving gateways. Gaibon and Dialin were already there, along with all the lords and ladies who had answered Elaine's call, from young Perival Mantiar to Brannin Martin and his wife, all mounted. Perival wore helmet and breastplate like every other male present. Brannin's were plain and dull and slightly dented where the armorer's hammer had failed its task, tools of his trade as surely as the plain-hilted sword scabbarded at his side. Perival's were as gilded as conils and branlets, worked with the silver anvil of Mantiar, where theirs were lacquered with Northan's black eagles and Gilliard's red leopards. Pretty armor for being seen in. Birgitta hoped the women had sense enough to keep those boys out of any fighting. Looking at some of those women's faces, grim and determined, she hoped they had sense enough to stay clear themselves. At least none was wearing a sword. The simple truth was, a woman had to be more skilled than a man to face him with a sword. Stronger arms made too much difference otherwise. Much better to use a bow. The windfinders were grimacing as they shifted their bare feet uneasily on ground still muddy from yesterday's downpour. Wet they were more than accustomed to, but not mud. "This man will not tell me where the gateway is to reach," Shanella said furiously, pointing to Gaibon as Birgitta dismounted. "I want to be done so I can wash my feet." "My lady!" a woman's voice called from back down the street. "My lady Birgitta!" Rena Harfour came running up the line of guardsmen, her red skirts held high, exposing her stockinged legs to the knee. Birgitta did not think she had ever seen the woman so much as trot. Mistress Harfour was one of those women who always did everything perfectly. Every time they met, she made Birgitta conscious of every last mistake she herself had ever made. 2 men in red and white livery were running behind her, carrying a litter between them. When they came closer, Birgitta saw that it held a lanky, helmetless guardsman with an arrow piercing his right arm and another jutting from his right thigh. Blood trickled down both shafts, so he left a thin trail of drops on the paving stones. "He insisted on being brought to you or Captain Gaibon immediately, my lady," Mistress Harfour said breathlessly, fanning herself with one hand. The young guardsman struggled to sit up until Birgitta pressed him back down. 3 or 4 companies of mercenaries are attacking the farm-adding gate, my lady," he said, pain racking his face and tinging his voice. "From inside the city, I mean. They placed archers to shoot anyone who tried to wave the signal flags for help. But I managed to get away, and my horse lasted just long enough." Birgitta growled an oath. Cordwyn, Gomaisen, and Barkovan would be among them, she was ready to wager. She should have pressed Elaine to put them out of the city as soon as they made their demands. She did not realize she had spoken aloud until the wounded guardsman spoke up. "No, my lady. Leastwise, not Barkovan. Him and 12 or so of his men dropped by to pass the time, and the lieutenant figures they're the only reason we've managed to hold on, if they are still holding. They were using battering rams on the tower doors when I looked back. But there's more, my lady. There's men massing in low Camelin outside the gates.
10,000, maybe twice that. Hard to tell the way those streets twist.
Birgitta winced. 10,000 men would be enough to carry an assault from the outside, whether or not the mercenaries were held off, unless she sent everything, and she could not. What in the light was she to do? Burn her? She could plan a raid to rescue someone from a fortress or scout in country held by the enemy with confidence that she knew what she was doing. But this was a battle, with the fate of Caemlyn and maybe the throne in the balance. Still, she had it to do. "Mistress Harford, take this man back to the palace and see his wounds tended, please." There was no point in asking the Windfinders for healing. They had already made it clear that was taking part in the war, in their view. "Dial in, leave me all of the horse and 1,000 halberdmen. You take the rest and all of the crossbowmen and archers available, and every man you can scrape together who can hold a sword. If the gate is still holding when the kinswomen get you there, make sure it continues to hold. If it's fallen, take it back, and hold that bloody wall till I can get there." "Very well," Dialin said, as if those were the easiest orders in the world to carry out. "Conyle, Catalin, Branlett, Perivale, you come with me. Your foot will fight better with you there." Conyle looked disappointed, no doubt seeing himself riding in a gallant charge, but he gathered his reins and whispered something that made the two younger boys chuckle. "So will my horse fight better," Catalin protested. "I want to help rescue Elaine." "You came to help her secure the throne," Dialin said sharply, "and you'll go where you're needed to see to that, or you and I will have another talk later." Whatever that meant, Catalin's plump face reddened, but she sullenly followed Dialin and the others when they rode away. Gaibon looked at Birgitta, yet he said nothing, though likely he was wondering why she was not sending more. He would not challenge her publicly. The problem was she did not know how many Black Sisters would be with Elaine. She needed every Windfinder, needed them to believe they were all necessary. Had there been time, she would have stripped the entries from the outer towers, stripped even the gates. "Make the gateway," she told Shanella, "to just this side of the ridge east of the city, right on top of the Arranen Road and facing away from the city." The Windfinders gathered in a circle, doing whatever they had to do to link and taking their bloody time about it. Suddenly the vertical silver-blue slash of a gateway appeared, widening into an opening, 5 paces tall, and covering the whole width of the cleared ground that showed a wide road of hard-packed clay climbing the gentle slope of the 10-span-high ridge on its way to the River Arranen. Aramilla had camps beyond that ridge. Given the news, they might be empty. With luck, they were. But she could not concern herself with them now in any event. "Forward and deploy as ordered!" Gaibon shouted, and spurred his tall bay through, followed by the gathered nobles and the guardsmen 10 abreast. The guardsmen began curling off to the left and out of sight, while the nobles took a position a little up the ridge. Some began peering toward the city through looking-glasses. Gaibon dismounted and ran, crouching to peer over the crest through his. Birgitta could almost feel the impatience of the guardswomen waiting behind her. "You did not need a gateway this large," Shanella said, frowning at the column of horsemen flowing into the gateway. "Why, come with me," Birgitta said, taking the Windfinder by her arm. "I want to show you something." Pulling the dun along by his reins, she began drawing the woman toward the gateway. "You can come back once you've seen it." If she knew the least thing about Shanella, she was the one guiding the circle. For the rest, she was counting on human nature. She did not look back, yet she nearly sighed with relief when she heard the other Windfinders murmuring among themselves behind her, following. Whatever Gaibon had seen, it was good news, because he straightened up before running back down to his horse. Aramilla must have stripped her camps to the bone. Make it 20,000 at the Farmadding Gate, then, if not more. The light send it was holding. The light send everywhere was holding. But Elaine first. First and above all else. When she reached Gaibon, who was back on his bay, the guardswomen arrayed themselves in 3 lines behind Casela off to one side. The whole 100-pace width of the gateway was filled with men and horses now, trotting as they hurried left and right to join the others already forming in 3 ranks that grew to either side of the road. Good. There would be no easy way for the Windfinders to duck back through for a little while.
a wagon with an arched canvas cover and a four-horse team, surrounded by a small mounted party, was halted in the road just beyond the last buildings of Low Camelin, perhaps a mile distant. Beyond it, people bustled in the open brick markets that lined the road, going about their lives as best they could, but they might as well not have existed. Elaine was in that wagon. Birgitta raised her hand without taking her eyes from the vehicle, and Gibbon put his brass-mounted looking-glass in her palm. Wagon and riders leaped closer when she raised the tube to her eye.
"What did you want me to see?" Shanella demanded.
"In a moment," Birgitta replied. There were four men, three of them mounted, but more important were the seven women on horseback. It was a good looking glass, but not good enough for her to make out an ageless face at that distance. Still, she had to assume all seven were Aes Sedai. Eight against seven might have seemed almost even odds, but not when the eight were linked. Not if she could make the eight take part. What were the Dark Friends thinking? Seeing thousands of soldiers and armsmen appear from behind what would seem to them a heat haze hanging in the air. She lowered the glass. Noblemen were beginning to ride down as their armsmen came out and went to join the lines. However surprised the Dark Friends were, they did not dither long. Lightning began flashing down out of a clear sky, silver-blue bolts that struck the ground with thunderous crashes and threw men and horses like splashed mud. Horses reared and plunged and screamed, but men fought to control their mounts, to hold their places. No one ran. The booming thunder that accompanied those blasts struck Birgitta like blows, staggering her. She could feel her hair stirring, trying to rise out of her braid. The air smelled sharp. It seemed to tingle. Again lightning lashed the ranks. In Low Camelin, people were running away. Most were running away, but some fools actually ran to where they could have a better view. The ends of narrow streets opening onto the countryside began filling with spectators.
"If we're going to face that, we might as well be moving and make it harder for them," Gibbon said, gathering his reins. "With your permission, my lady."
"We'll lose fewer if you're moving," Birgitta agreed, and he spurred down the ridge.
Kasela halted her horse in front of Birgitta and saluted, an arm across her chest. Her narrow face was grim behind the face bars of her lacquered helmet.
"Permission for the bodyguard to join the line, my lady?"
You could hear the capital. They were not just any bodyguard. They were the daughter heir's bodyguard, and would be the queen's bodyguard.
"Granted," Birgitta said. "If anyone had a right, these women did."
The Arafelin whirled her horse and galloped down the slope, followed by the rest of the bodyguard to take their place in those lightning-torn ranks. A company of mercenaries, perhaps 200 men in black-painted helmets and breastplates, riding behind a red banner bearing a running black wolf, halted when they saw what they were riding into. But men behind the banners of half a dozen houses pushed past them, and they had no choice but to go on. More noblemen rode down to lead their men. Brannan and Kelwyn, Laerid and Beryl, others. None hesitated once he saw his own banner appear. Sergei's was not the only woman to move her horse a few paces, as if she, too, meant to join with her armsmen when her banner came out of the gateway.
"At a walk!" Gibbon shouted, to be heard over the explosions.
All along the line other voices echoed him.
"Advance!"
Wheeling his bay, he rode slowly toward the Dark Friend Aes Sedai, while lightning boomed and crashed and men and horses flew in fountains of earth.
"What did you want me to see?" Shanella demanded again. "I want to be away from this place."
Small danger of that for the moment. Men were still coming out of the gateway, galloping or running to catch up. Fireballs fell among the ranks, too, now, adding their own eruptions of dirt, arms, legs. A horse's head spun lazily into the air.
"This," Birgitta said, gesturing to the scene in front of them.
Gibbon had begun to trot, pulling the others with him, the three ranks holding steady in their advance, others coming as hard as they could to join them. Abruptly, a leg-thick bar of what appeared to be liquid white fire shot out from one of the women beside the wagon. It quite literally carved a gap 15 paces wide in the lines. For a heartbeat, shimmering flecks floated in the air. The shapes of men and horses struck, and then were consumed. The bar suddenly jerked up into the air, higher and higher, then winked out, leaving dim purple lines across Birgitta's vision. Balefire. Burning men out of the pattern so that they were dead before it struck them. She swung the looking glass up to her eye long enough to spot the woman holding a slim black rod that appeared to be perhaps a pace long. Gibbon began to charge. It was too soon, but his only hope was to close while he still had men alive. His only hope but one. Over the thunderous explosions of fireballs and lightning rose a ragged cry of, "Elaine and Andor!" Ragged but full-throated. The banners were all streaming. A brave sight, if you could ignore how many were falling. A horse and rider struck squarely by a fireball simply disintegrated. Men and horses all around them going down as well. Some managed to rise again. A riderless horse stood on three legs, tried to run and fell over, thrashing. "This?" Shanella said incredulously. "I have no desire to watch men die." Another bar of balefire sliced a breach of nearly 20 paces in the charging ranks before knifing down into the ground, cutting a trench halfway back to the wagon before it vanished. There were a good many dead, though not so many as it seemed there should be. Birgitta had seen the same in battles during the Trolloc Wars where the power had been used. For every man who lay still, two or three were staggering to their feet or trying to stem a flow of blood. For every horse stiff-legged in death, two more stood on wobbly legs. The hail of fire and lightning continued unabated. "Then stop it," Birgitta said. "If they kill all the soldiers, or just enough to make the rest break, then Elaine is lost." Not forever. Burn her, she would track her for the rest of her life to see her free. But the Light only knew what they might do to her in that time. "Zaida's bargain is lost. You will have lost it." The morning was not warm, yet sweat beaded on Shanella's forehead. Fireballs and lightning erupted among the riders following Gibbon. The woman holding the rod raised her arm again. Even without using the looking glass, Birgitta was sure it was pointed straight at Gibbon. He had to see it, but he never swerved a hair. Suddenly another bolt of lightning slashed down and struck the woman holding the rod. She flew in one direction, her mount in another. One of the wagon team sagged to the ground while the others danced and reared. They would have run except for their dead tracemate. The other horses around the wagon were rearing and plunging too. The rain of fire and lightning ceased as the Aes Sedai fought to control their horses, to maintain their saddles. Rather than trying to calm his team, the man on the driver's seat leaped down and drew his sword as he began to run toward the charging horsemen. The onlookers in Low Camelin were running again too, this time away. "Take the others alive," Birgitta snapped. She did not much care whether they lived. They would die soon enough for being dark friends and murderers, but Elaine was in that bloody wagon. Shanella nodded stiffly, and around the wagon riders began toppling from their fractious mounts to lie struggling on the ground as if bound hand and foot, which they were, of course. The running man fell on his face and lay writhing. "I shielded the women, too," Shanella said. Even holding the power, they would have been no match for a circle of eight. Gibbon raised his hand, slowing the charge to a walk. It was remarkable how short a time it all had taken. He was less than halfway to the wagon. Men mounted and afoot were still pouring out of the gateway. Swinging into the dun saddle, Birgitta galloped toward Elaine. "Bloody woman," she thought. The bond had never once carried any hint of fear.